Seer. My father's man of Racha lived here, he had a full life over here. He grew up in Slabodka, learned the yeshiva, got married, moved to Kovno, then moved here. By the time the war came, he was in his 40s. He was a person who had a business. He was one of the few Balabatim in Kovno Slabodka.
A Ben Torah, and he was allowed to lay in his Slabodka Yeshiva Ben Azmanim. He had a wife and two children who, by the time the war came, I think his oldest was 8 or 9. The war came, and you know, as you have to be able to picture that this was a whole world over here. Slabodka and Kovno was an entire world, and by the time the war was over, there was nothing left. You know, people speak a lot about, Ellie mentioned before, the horrors of the pogrom, what it was like, but I think it takes some thinking about what it's like for a person to have a full life. At 50, most people start thinking about retiring and writing memoirs. When the war was over, he was close to 50, and he had to make a decision between just sort of cutting himself off and forgetting about the world, or starting a life. And he made a decision that his responsibility is to start a new life. He married my mother, who was 15 years younger, easier than him. She came from a very different world than him. And he did it because he felt the right thing to do is reestablish. We grew up with a tremendously beautiful home. I mean, people talk about being children of survivors. I never felt that way. My father was a wonderful father. He discussed things with us, spoke with us, took us on walks. It was just an extremely, it was an excellent fatherhood for any circumstance. My father spoke a lot about the life before because the life was beautiful. He admired the Litvish Yidden. He admired their tznius, the fact that they understated themselves, the fact that they didn't speak about themselves, the fact that they did things without complaining. Those are things that were very, very dear to him. And he bemoaned that America is not like that. But he would tell us a lot about it. He would speak a lot about it, describe it to us. He didn't speak about actual killings. Those are things he didn't talk about. But certain events in the ghetto, certain things that were extremely meaningful to him. My father told me, and this is kind of something that fits him, he said one of the Germans looked a little more menschlich than the other ones. And he turned to him and asked him, how can you people do this? And the person told him, it's your fault. You Jews brought this war upon the world, and you're suffering its consequence. My father told me he really thought the person believes it. He felt the person, you know, was a half-wit, okay, like most of the others. He felt the person was a blockhead, and somebody just hammered it in. But that was the way he felt it. My father told me stories about Rabbi Avraham Grudzinski, who was with him in the ghetto, and he was his Rebbe. He spoke about Rabbi Motel Pogromansky, who was an incredible figure. Rabbi Motel Pogromansky was one of the, possibly the great, the most chashev, quote-unquote, bacher in the yeshiva world. He was probably close to 40, or late 30s. He was a giant ilui at Bal Musa. My father attended to him, and my father spoke to me about him. And he said things that he said, and hanhagas that he had in the ghetto. A lot of it it's written up in the book on Rabbi Motel. A lot of it I heard firsthand from my father. My father spoke about the Kovno Rav, that my father was Mishamis. My father was able to smuggle food into the ghetto. My father worked on a food brigade. They would go in every morning, they would go out of the ghetto, they would bring food for the ghetto, and he was able to smuggle stuff in, and he would ask Rabbi Motel Pogromansky, who should I give it to? He didn't want to paskin it on his own. I had a story once. I was sitting Shabbos by the Suda in Azer Bira, and I hear a knock on my door. An elderly person knocks on the door. I open up. The person's name is Reb Zalman Kremerman. And he asks me, he was a nephew of Reb Doniel from Kelm, a balabas, a very fine person. He asked me if I'm related to my father, to Betzin. I said, yes, I'm a son. He said, it's because your father I'm alive today, because he told me that I should come every day 4 o'clock to his house. There'll be soup waiting for me. I shouldn't come early, I shouldn't come later. In other words, he had a lot of people and he wanted each one not to know the other one. But all of them was those that Reb Muttal told him. He felt it's a shaila nefashis, he can't paskin it, and Reb Muttal needs to paskin it. My father gave us over a tremendous love for everything about Litvische Yidentum. The avas chachma, the refinement, and he carried it over. He spoke about it a lot. I remember the name Linkevskas from when I'm a young boy. I could never put a picture to it, but that's what it was. My father remembered life. He remembered the Alta Slabotka. As a young boy, he saw him in the yeshiva. So my father was born, let's say, 1903, and he was in Kremenchuk. He went a lot of the things we spoke about, the Jews being chased out to deep Russia. My father spent some of his childhood years in Kremenchuk. He remembers things about it. So I'll go upon him. He remembered Reb Elchanan. He didn't speak about Reb Elchanan being killed, but he remembered Reb Elchanan, and he described him to me as, you know, a towering figure in just not mitzad the lomdus and everything, but mitzad the way he carried himself and the way he projected himself to people and the way people saw him. He was Meshich Molamala. First of all, he was a very tall person relative to people in those days, Reb Elchanan. And he also, there was something royal about his carriage that my father was extremely taken, everyone was taken by it. It was a real life experience for him, all these things that are stories now. And for me it's the same, you know, he brought it to life, and it's the first time I actually was able to get a physical sense of it. Anything you wanted? We're now heading to the 7th Fort.
Israeli will speak more about it.
He has a letter and things. You want to test it out more?
People ask, what are these forts? We mentioned already there are 11 forts around Kovno, and they were Russian military forts. This was a very strategic position, being in the northwest of the Russian Empire, on the borders with Sweden and other countries. And when the Germans come in, these are places that are easy to use as prisons and killing grounds, especially the 4th, the 7th, and the 9th. And the largest number of Yidden, which is around over 50,000, that was at the 9th fort. And smaller numbers, but significant numbers by the 7th and the 4th. An important person in each ghetto was the Alte Judenrat. The Germans understood that they weren't able to control everyone in the ghetto, all the Yidden in the ghetto, by themselves. So there was a Jewish police. And on top of the police, there was a Judenrat, a Jewish council, who were in charge. And most famously, Some of them come out positive, some come out negative. If anyone has read about Adam Cherniakov in Warsaw, the most controversial, the most negative is Chaim Rumkowski in Lodz. But the head of the Judenrat here in Kovno was a doctor called Ochanan Elkas, who was mamish. He comes through amazing from beginning to end of the ghetto. It was a very long period that the ghetto was here, all the way to the end, until the end of 1943. And he tries his best. He tries his best to help smuggle people out, to help smuggle things in. The zero cooperation with the Nazis on his part, as opposed to other heads of Judenrat who did cooperate with Nazis. So there's an amazing letter that we have. He had a son and a daughter who he managed to get to London, and his family actually today still live in London, Elkas. And he manages to get this letter that he's written on his deathbed, and goes through very much of what happens here in the ghetto. And just to close your eyes, just to listen to these words, it's really, really, really brings the picture of the ghetto closer. He writes, "My beloved son and daughter, I'm writing these lines." Sorry, can you hear? Okay. It's a long letter, but we'll start it and I'll put it onto the group. "My beloved son and daughter, I'm writing these lines, my dear children, in the Vale of Tears in Slabodka, Kovno Ghetto, where I've been for over 2 years. We have now heard in a few days our fate is to be sealed. The ghetto is to be crushed and torn asunder. Whether we are all to perish or whether a few of us are to survive is in Hashem's hands. We fear that only those capable of slave labor will live. The rest of us are probably sentenced to death. We are left a few out of many. Out of the 35,000 Jews of Kovno, approximately 17,000 remain. Out of a quarter of a million Jews in Lithuania, only 25,000 live. Plus 5,000 who, during the last few days, were deported to hard labor in Latvia, stripped of all their belongings. The rest were put to death in terrible ways by the followers of the greatest Haman of all time and of all generations. Some of those dear and close to us too are no longer with us. Your aunt Hannah, your uncle Arya were killed with 1,500 souls of the ghetto on October 4th, 1941. Uncle Tzvi, who was lying in the hospital suffering from a broken leg, was saved by a Ness. All the patients, doctors, nurses, relatives, and visitors who happened to be there were burnt to death after soldiers had blocked all the doors and windows of the hospital and set fire to it. In the provinces, apart from Shavuot, no single Jew survives. Your uncle Dov and his son Shmuel were taken out and killed with the rest of the Calvaria Kehilla during the first months of the war. That's about 2 years ago. Due to outer forces and inner circumstances, only our ghetto has managed to survive and live out its diaspora life for the last 2 years, in slavery, hard labor, and deprivation. Almost all of our clothing, belongings, and books were taken from us by the authorities. The last massacre, when 10,000 victims were killed at one time, took place on October 28, 1941. Our total kehillah had to go through the selection by our rulers, life or death. I am the man who with my own eyes saw those about to die. I was there early on the morning of October 29th in the camp that led to the slaughter at the 9th fort. With my own ears I heard the awe-inspiring and terrible symphony, the weeping and screaming of 10,000 people, old and young, a scream that tore at the heart of heaven. No ear had to hear such cries through the ages and generations. With many of our martyrs, I challenged my Creator, and with them, from my heart torn in agony, I cried, Mi kamocha ve'elim Hashem. In my effort to save people, here and there, I was beaten by soldiers. Wounded and bleeding, I fainted, and was carried in the arms of friends to a place outside the camp. There, a small group of about 30 or 40 survived, witnesses to the fire. We are, it appears, one of the staging centers in the East. before our eyes, before the very windows of our houses, that have passed over the last 2 years many, many thousands of Jews from southern Germany and Vienna to be taken with their belongings to the Ninth Fort, which is some kilometers from us. There they are killed with extreme cruelty. We learned later that they were misers. They were told they were coming to Kovno to settle in our ghetto. He goes through with more details, and this is how he ends the letter. Yol, my beloved, be a faithful son to your people. Take care of your nation. Do not worry about the Gentiles. During our long galus, they have not given us an eighth of an eighth of what we have given them. Immerse yourself in this question and return to it again and again. Try to settle in Eretz Yisrael. Tie your destiny to the land of our future. Even if life there may be hard, it is life full of content and meaning. Great and mighty is the power of Emunah and Betochen. Betochen can move mountains. Do not look to the left or to the right as you pursue your path. If at times you see your people straying, do not let your heart lose courage, my son. It's not their fault, it's our bitter galus that has made them so. Let truth be always before you and under your feet. MS will guide you and show you the path of life. And you, my dear daughter Sarah, read most carefully what I've just said to Yol. I trust your clear mind and sound judgment. Do not live for the moment. Do not stray from your chosen path and pick flowers at the wayside. They soon wilt. Feed a life full of beauty, a pure life full of content and meaning. For all your days, walk together. Let no distance separate you. Let no serious event come between you. Remember, both of you, what Amalek has done to us. Remember and never forget it all your days, and pass this memory as a sacred testament to future generations. The Germans killed, slaughtered, and murdered us in complete impunity. I was there with them. I saw them when they sent thousands of people, men, women, children, infants to the death, while enjoying their breakfast and while mocking our martyrs. I saw them coming back from the murderous missions, dirty, stained from head to foot with the blood of our dear ones. They sat at their table, eating and drinking, listening to light music. They are professional executioners. The soil of Lithuania is soaked with our blood, killed at the hands of Lithuanians themselves, Lithuanians with whom we had lived for hundreds of years. And with all our strength, we helped to achieve their own national independence. 7,000 of our brothers and sisters were killed by Lithuanians in terrible and barbarous ways the last days of June 1941. They themselves and no others executed whole congregations following German orders. They searched with special pleasure cellars and wells, fields and forests for those in hiding, turned them over to the authorities, never have anything to do with them, and their children are accursed forever. I'm writing this in an hour when many desperate souls, widows and orphans, threadbare and hungry, are camping on my doorstep, imploring us for help. My strength is ebbing. There is a desert inside me. My soul is scorched. I am naked and empty. There are no words in my mouth, but you, my most dearly beloved, will know what I wanted to say to you at this hour. And now for a moment I close my eyes. I see you both standing before me. I embrace and kiss you both. And I say to you again that until my last breath, I remain your loving father, Elchanan.